Hello, I'm Joshua Morris, and welcome back to the TES News Podcast. Each week on this show, I'll be catching up with our reporters across our news and analysis teams here at TES, as they share the education stories they think should be in the spotlight that week. A little later in this episode, Senior Editor Dan Wirth is back to discuss his interview with International Baccalaureate Director General Olli-Pekka Heininen, where Heininen revealed that now might be the time for the IB diploma program to move to digital assessment. We also take a look at a really handy 10-step guide to getting air cleaning units set up in your school. But first, I'm joined by reporter Callum Mason to go over the key findings of the TES Wellbeing Report 2022. Callum, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Now, we're going to pick out some of the key points here in a moment, but first, just generally, what is this report? What kind of picture does it paint for teacher wellbeing at the moment?
So TES's wellbeing report brings together reflections from about, I think, more than 4,300 school staff internationally, nearly 3,000 of whom are UK-based, and it records their thoughts about their working lives. So it covers things from worries about workload to the resilience of relationships with colleagues and with students. The headline figures that we see in the report is that around 38%, so under 2 in 5 school staff, feel confident in their role. And as well as this, 2/3 of teachers say that their workload is unmanageable. Obviously, these aren't figures that those working in teaching or in education more broadly will want to see. Mm-hmm. And commentators that have analysed results have said that they sort of shed light on the severe impact of the pandemic on the teaching profession.
Yeah.
I suppose that teachers have had to learn like a lot of new skills in the wake of the pandemic and often take on new work. And the new report says that teachers have been required to teach online, often for the first time, and having to create teacher-assessed grades after exams were cancelled. That these could be factors that have led to a drop in confidence among the school workforce. And in terms of what this means on a macro level, I guess, for teaching, well, we know that teacher retention was already a major concern before the pandemic. And this trend has been exacerbated by the pandemic. So the report points out that according to the latest DfE figures, 1 in 6 teachers are now leaving the profession within a year. That's the bad news. I appreciate it probably sounds quite bleak so far. But the good news is that the results of this survey can offer clear guidance about where improvements can be made to boost wellbeing. So communication between leadership and staff, for example, comes up as a very important factor, I guess, to teachers. And this is something that the report says can be improved fairly simply. Above all, the report says that the survey results show how crucial it is for senior leaders to make wellbeing a key focus in schools.
Yeah, that's definitely the point of the report. It's to give something to look at to enact some positive change.
Absolutely.
So what are some of the other key findings in the report?
Yeah, so looking a bit deeper into the report, we see that almost half of school staff said that they don't feel they have a voice about how things go at their school. So that's something that I think leaders will want to look at. And a similar number said that they didn't feel that they had the autonomy to make decisions. This was particularly true for teaching staff. So I think 57% of teachers and 41% of middle leaders said they lacked autonomy. So it's looking like there's a little bit of a disconnect between more senior staff and teaching staff. 47%, I think, of UK respondents said that there weren't opportunities for them to develop in their position as well. So I guess related to this, staff highlighted a lack of that feedback for them to develop as professionals. So I think these were sort of key factors that were picked up as well.
So we published a similar survey in late 2020. So we can start to see some of the trends here, right? The headline point that we've run with is that less than 2 in 5 teachers feel confident in their role, which is down from just under 4 in 5 in the 2020 survey. I think there's a similar story across other metrics too, right? How much of this is down to the pandemic?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you look at the results and then compare them to previous reports, as you've just done there, it's absolutely clear that the results are at least partly down to the effects of the pandemic. So yeah, last year, the Wellbeing Report said that I think 79% of staff were confident in their role. And the figure for teachers finding their workload unmanageable, I think, is around 3 times higher this time than last time. So it's really clear the pandemic has affected teaching and massively affected the results here. I think since the pandemic has taken hold, the report is also saying that teachers and school leaders have been on pretty they've taken on sort of previously unimaginable levels of like logistical complexity around bubbles, closures and contact tracing, things like that. And it's pretty clear why these would have a major effect on well-being. But I think we shouldn't be thinking that the results are only down to the impact of the pandemic as well. So the report sort of lays out ever-present threats as well. So threats like inspection, along with grueling workloads and stretched budgets. And these have caused work-related stress for staff as well. So we can't assume that all the issues raised in the report will go away when the changes that the teachers have had to make as the result of the pandemic subside.
Obviously not a great picture overall, but hopefully with reports like this, schools and government can make some positive change.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the thing with this report, that it raises a lot of concerns and things that teachers have found difficult. But hopefully as a result of that, I think seeing laid out bare the state of teaching and the state of well-being amongst teachers, it can provide some things that can be improved. I think when you've got that quantitative data to look at, then it shows you sort of the key factors that are the most important and that need to be looked at in order to improve the well-being of teachers and hopefully keep them feeling fulfilled and like they want to stay in their roles and want to enjoy their roles as well and progress.
Yeah, and if you're looking for the full report, it's available on our website, tes.com/magazine, or you can search TES Wellbeing Report 2022. Callum, thank you again for joining me today.
Thanks very much for having me on. Thank you.
Earlier this week, senior editor Dan Worth had the chance to talk to International Baccalaureate Director General Olli-Pekka Heininen for the TES International podcast. Heininen started the job in May 2021, so all of his tenure so far has been during the rapidly changing pandemic world. Despite the many challenges the pandemic has brought to the education landscape, Heininen told us that now might be the right time for the IB's diploma program to move to digital assessment.
Digital assessment can open doors to a model that supports learning better than the traditional model. I think we have now come to the moment for the IB to move into that area. And that is something that we are looking at the moment.
Dan, welcome.
Hi, Josh. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
So what might this mean then for the future of the IB diploma program?
It's a good question, isn't it? And as you heard from the comments there, and we did a write-up with him and a news story about those comments because they were so notable. Fundamentally, although it's definitely not, we can't say it's definitely going to happen, but he seems to say very strongly that they're looking at it, that they see it's an area it's the time has come to move into it, that he thinks it has benefits in terms of the traditional assessment doesn't quite reach. So it could be the case that in the not too distant future, perhaps we'll see students on the diploma program in IB schools, of which there are hundreds around the world. So this is a move that would affect a lot of people. I mean, obviously, state schools in England, the IB is not what they do, but it's still very interesting. It's a big deal, and it's something that if they start doing it and people like it and it goes well, you might see other people looking over and going, well, look, that major international curriculum is doing digital exams at that age. Why can't we do that? So it could well mean that, in the future, pupils doing exams digitally, whether that means touchscreen, writing essays, choosing, multiple choice questions. I mean, again, these are all things up in the air. I suspect we'll talk about that a bit as well shortly. But overall, if it happens, I think it would be a very notable move and one that a lot of people would watch to see how it played out.
Yeah, and they're kind of already providing digital assessment for the middle years program, aren't they? So why not the diploma program yet?
Yeah, you're right. The middle years program, which I won't try and guess at which age exactly that's covered, but obviously it's before the diploma program. I think we can safely say that. They do have optional 2-hour digital exams, which is in areas from literature, geography to history, maths and science. And it's a mix of, you can watch a video on their website and you can see students doing it as a sort of example. And it's sort of a mix of, simple 1 or 2 mark questions, as well as more long form answers. So I suspect they were happy to do it in that arena, because although that obviously is important, and in no way I want to say it isn't important, it's not quite the same importance as the diploma program, which is the one that opens up the doors to university for students of that age. So obviously the diploma program leads to, you know, is very high profile in that regard. He said it was wise of the IB not to rush into this area. And he meant with regards to the diploma program, because it's so important, because you have to make the decisions correctly, because if they bring in digital assessment and it goes wrong, it doesn't work, you know, there's a big issue 1 year, it would be a disaster. Whereas the middle years program, if they did something similar and it was optional and it all fell apart, yes, it's going to be a problem. Yes, lots of people are going to be very unhappy, but it wouldn't have quite the same impact, I think. So I think that's why they were probably happy to bring it into middle years, see what's going to go from there. And of course, they're going to be looking at it, I'm sure, and going, well, look, we know that works really well. We know students do well on that. They like it. It leads to good forms of teaching, good form of learning. Let's move that up to the diploma program. But it's going to come with probably a lot more considerations on top, I'd have thought.
It's probably a safer ground to test it in.
Yeah, basically.
And it seems like it's working there.
Mm.
So what has reaction been like to this proposed change?
Yeah, well, I, as you can imagine, when he told me this, I sort of then contacted a few of our many good IB school contacts, you know, senior leaders at IB schools in Dubai, in England, in Switzerland. And yeah, exactly that. So what do you think? And the reaction was interesting. I would say it was kind of quietly positive, sort of, yeah, that sounds good. And we think that's where the modern world is going. And we know students like, you know, being digital. And that actually, again, you can imagine actually for some of them, they do this in the middle years program and they have to go back to the more, let's say, traditional way of doing written exams, having just done digital exams. So one teacher said actually it would make more sense because it would just provide a consistency of how they're assessed. But also, although there was that positivity and that sense of, yes, this doesn't seem like the most, you know, out there idea, there were a lot of questions too, you know, like firstly, what actually are the benefits? Like, are we going to be seeing proof of why we think it's worth doing, or are we going to do it because it's digital, therefore we should do it? So I guess there's a sense of let's prove it's useful. And then what are the things like, who's responsible for the technology access, for connectivity? You know, if something goes wrong, if the machine crashes or the software breaks, you know, who's at fault? The school, the student, the pupil, the parents, the teacher? You know, I mean, how's that going to work? You could even say, you know, what happens is it going to be an exam where you're allowed access to the internet or where it's a closed book exam done digitally? You know, what's that going to mean? So again, there was no groundswell of this will be a disaster or this is the best thing ever. I think it was in the middle of a quiet sort of, yeah, okay, makes sense, but we'll wait to see the details, which makes sense. And I think on that final point, it's worth saying he did say during this year, you will hear more about this. That was Heinonen who said that. So we might not have long to wait. You know, it might be that within the next 10, 11 months, we get a big announcement about this is how it's going to look, or this is what we're proposing. We're open for consultation, which is very exciting because often these things are said and then you kind of get a vague, like, oh, at some point in the future. But he seemed very happy to say within the year, you will definitely hear more about this. So I think that's one we'll probably talk about then.
Yeah, pretty concrete.
Mm.
And as always, you can find the full write-up for this article on our website, tez.com/magazine. You can also listen to the full audio interview on the TES International podcast hosted by Dan Wirth. So next up then, Dan, just the other week, we were discussing the high energy bills that some schools are facing. And one of the topics of discussion that also came up was that schools need to be properly ventilated at the moment. The next article we're going to talk about is a 10-step guide to using air cleaning units. Now, I actually have a small one of these myself, an HEPA filter device, or HEPA, and that's because I'm allergic to dust and pollen, so it helps to remove those from my bedroom so I don't wake up all puffy-eyed every morning. But the guide also is saying that these HEPA filter devices can be really useful for removing bacteria and virus particles from the air too. So what are some of the key steps from this guide then, Dan?
Yes, well, this guide, I think it's worth, before we delve into it, saying this has been written for us by Professor Mark Mon-Williams and Professor Catherine Noakes, who are based at the University of Leeds, and they've worked with a variety of others, with schools and other sort of experts in this area as a part of a consortium they call the Class Act Consortium, which is a brilliant pun, actually, because ACT comes from air cleaning technologies. So I guess the idea of Class Act, you know, we're going to put these tech into classrooms I suspect someone thought that and it was a light bulb moment. They're doing research on how these things can best be used in schools. And although this research is not based on their final findings yet, it's based on what they've learned thus far. There are 10 points they've put together. And the idea is that a school who's thinking about buying one of these units, or maybe has applied to one through the Department for Education, understands exactly how to use it, where to put it, what they should be looking for, what are the issues, you know, how do you maintain them? And I won't go through it point by point because we've been here for a long time. And I think to read it is the key thing because it's very, very interesting. But there's some lots of good points they make, you know, about how to evaluate whether you do need one of these machines. And then if you think you do, how to actually do a cost-benefit analysis to see if it's worth the purchase. Because you might say, well, actually, the benefit it's going to give us is not that high, or it's not that pressing a need. And actually, we know we're going to improve the ventilation in our school in the next year anyway. It's not really worth the cost now. It would be an outlay that would become very quickly redundant.
Yeah, and there's more expensive ones and less expensive ones. And part of the cost analysis is seeing where you are on that scale.
Exactly, yeah. That's a whole point on its own. Number point four is choose the right equipment, which again, you know, as a headline, it sounds obvious. But they explain as you go through it that, well, actually, you want to look at how big is the unit, how robust is it? You know, if it's in a classroom, that's a consideration, right? How easy is it to clean, to change the filter? How easy is it to control? I mean, some of these things are Wi-Fi enabled. Okay, that sounds kind of futuristic or you know, like to be expected, I suppose. But is that a good thing? Or does that mean you've got to get IT involved and then you've got to have software updates on this thing? Do you want that? You know, is it going to be mounted on the wall? Or is it going to be put in the room? And one interesting point he says is that in their trials they've done with schools, they've already encountered the issue where there's not always enough plug sockets in a school, in a classroom, to put the device where you want to put it. And that means you've got to get plug sockets put in by an electrician, you know. That's another cost issue, time issue. So could you put it somewhere else? All these things that schools probably, they might think about, but you can imagine how in a busy environment with so much going on, when this idea of like, oh, we need some, you know, we think we want to buy some of these devices, you might not think about this. Whereas this guide is a really nice, like step-by-step, you know, here's what to think about.
I think one of the points that stood out to me, and I found it kind of cute almost, was that somebody needs to take responsibility for this machine. You know, someone needs to take responsibility for making sure that the filters are changed, etc.
Yeah. You read my mind. That was going to be the sort of the final thing I wanted to bring up within this is that, again, it's a really good point, like you say, because it sounds obvious in a way, but you can imagine actually, like you say, if you buy these things and you don't appoint someone with a direct sort of like, you are now responsible for these things, and that might mean going on a training course or having to meet with the manufacturer who someone sends an installer to site and they tell you how to do that. But if you don't do that, you can imagine that no one, it's that kind of thing, no one takes responsibility and then they end up not being looked after properly and the filters don't get changed or cleaned or replaced. So, you know, you've got to think about that. And that involves saying to someone, right, it's your responsibility. You need to go on to a training course. You need to change them once a week, once a month. And of course, it's understandable that might not be the most simple thing to do either, because that's not really what anyone signed up to be in education for necessarily. I mean, obviously you might have a site manager or a facilities team who might take responsibility, but actually is it, or might you say if they're in your classroom, they're your responsibility as the classroom teacher. Okay. Well, maybe not, I don't know, but you've got to think about it. And so, yeah, to your point, it's a sort of a nice sort of point to think about, isn't it? Like these things are real and they need someone to look after them. So I think a lot, I'd say thanks to the professors and for bringing this to us, because we were talking with them before Christmas and they said, look, actually we could put this together and put it out for you first for the TES audience, which is what we've done. So it's great of them to offer that to us. I hope the audience will get a lot out of it, because I suspect, well, they told me they are being inundated with schools asking for some guidance. How do we buy these things? Where do we put them? What do we do with them? How do we make them useful? I think this is the first stage in starting to provide some information.
Yeah. So if you're one of these schools that was out there looking for this guidance on how to install and take care of and manage one of these filters, you can find the full 10-step article on our website, tes.com/magazine. Dan, thank you again for joining me today.
No problem. Pleasure as always.
And as always, thank you for listening. I say it after every story, but you can find all of the stories that we've discussed today and plenty more on our website, tes.com/magazine. You can also follow us on Twitter @TES, and you can find this podcast on all good podcast platforms. just search TES News. We hope that you join us again next week for more of the TES News podcast.